Hello, my name is Dr. Christian Heim.
And my name is Dr. Caroline Heim.
We've got some exciting news.
We'll be talking about all things relationship.
All things relationship?
All things relationship.
That's a lot to talk about, Caroline.
Well, we've got a lot of talk shows to talk about it.
We have a lot of talk shows to talk about it, but what we are going to do is we're going to look at a study that has been done on relationships so that everything is backed by the science that we talk about here, and then we'll be looking at how you can apply some of that science into your life and into your relationship. And we will be looking at those relationship issues that perhaps we all come across and need a little bit of help in from time to time, Caroline.
Yeah, so it's really for people that are perhaps struggling in their relationship or want to make their relationship better, whether you're just starting out in a relationship, you're 20 years in, you're 50 years in. It's actually for anyone that's in a relationship, in a long-term relationship or wants to be in a long-term relationship.
And it's not only for people who are struggling, not only for people who are looking at a relationship, but if you're in a good relationship, hey, there's nothing wrong with making a good thing better.
Absolutely.
So we will see you, or you will hear us, on Friday night, 9 p.m.
Friday night, ET, so New York time, at 9 p.m.
Hello. My name is Dr. Christian Heim.
And my name is Dr. Caroline Heim.
And together we're here to bring you some of the science of relationships to help make your relationship thrive.
And I'm an associate professor.
And I'm a clinical psychiatrist.
And welcome to episode number 5. So, what are we talking about today, Christian?
Today we're going into that elusive topic of happiness. What contributes to happiness in a couple relationship?
Wow, what does contribute to happiness? Happiness, it is elusive, isn't it? But what can you give us an outline for today, Christian?
Yeah, it's a big topic, so we'll try to cover it in like this. We've got to look at a few definitions of happiness so that we know what we're talking about, because researchers tend to like to talk about satisfaction rather than happiness, but we all like to talk about happiness. Then I believe you're going to share with us the findings of what contributes to happiness in couple relationships from our study.
Yes, from our studies. So this is our large study that we did on resilient relationships. This is one aspect of the study, which was a survey, a big online survey of 1,112 coupled individuals from 52 different countries around the world. And so we asked them about happiness. We asked them about what really makes them happy, but we also and if they were happy, but we also ask them what aspects contribute to their happiness. So we have 6 aspects that contributed to their happiness and 6 aspects that contributed to their unhappiness.
For people out there who would like to be unhappy in their relationship,
that's right.
Just
yes.
So that you know what yes. makes you unhappy.
Well, we want to include everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you really like unhappiness, that's it.
Okay, so along the way, that there'll be some stories from couples. There'll be some real-life tips and suggestions that come from the couples, and we'll have a technique or two so that you can apply it to your relationship in your situation so that you can get on to that wonderful part of life, which is being happier in your relationship.
That's what we all want. Okay.
So shall we start off with some definitions?
Yes, definitions, happiness, and you use the word satisfaction too, so I don't like that word.
Well, no, I don't like the word either. All right, so.
But that's what actually couple therapists look at.
So the reason that we talk about satisfaction is because as researchers, we like to think that we're looking at things that are just more fundamental than happiness. Happiness is a bit elusive, whereas satisfaction, it's easier to measure. But is it? Because what we find is once we start talking to people about satisfaction, they start thinking about sexual satisfaction or just pleasure satisfaction, whereas happiness, as we know, is so much more than that. So I want to give a bit of a framework as to how to think about happiness, because it is a really big topic.
Yeah, very, very important. Also, when I think of satisfaction, I think of, oh, yes, I'm satisfied. This is okay. This is going okay. It doesn't have that deep joy.
It doesn't have a deep joy, and it makes it sound like an economic transaction, too.
So true.
Are you satisfied with a deal? Are you satisfied with how things are going?
Yeah.
Are you satisfied with a meal? But happiness, just even saying the word, brings a bit more of that joy, a bit of that life is worth living feeling. And that's actually what I believe people want from their relationships.
True. So, definitions.
Definitions. So, let's just look at a broad framework of how we can look at happiness, because we've got to look at it in these four areas. And this is actually a good way of breaking down happiness. We can look at the biological correlates of happiness. So, in other words, we could go straight into the brain to look at the chemicals that make for happiness. Then we can look at expectations, because expectations have a lot to do with how happy we are or we're not. My favorite area for happiness is meaning making, that beyond all the biology, it's the meaning that we derive from life. But then there's also this aspect of pleasure, that happiness is moment-to-moment pleasure as well. That if we just concentrate on the meaning, then we miss out on that day-to-day, moment-to-moment pleasure that gives us that feeling right now of, hey, this feels great. So they're the four areas.
Okay, so are we going to go through each of them, or do I get to pick, or what?
Yeah, you get to pick,
I always like to go into the brain, so...
You like to go into the brain.
Let's just start off with that, yeah.
Okay, so the biology of happiness. Okay, so in 2007, I'm going to start off with a story. I went to a conference on happiness, and you've got to imagine... hundreds of psychiatrists all in one room and a neuroscientist telling us the biology of happiness. And basically the first thing that this neuroscientist told us was that the brain is not wired to be happy.
And that made everyone depressed.
You bet. Because psychiatrists were in the business of having people happier, more satisfied with their life. And here's a neuroscientist telling us that the brain is not wired to be happy. And so what we did then was go through all the different brain imaging techniques, the measurements of the brain chemicals, and the interesting thing was that the neuroscientist came up with the conclusion that the brain is not wired to be happy, but it's wired to learn. And okay, so this is biological. This is biological, right? And what's exciting about that is at first you go, yeah, learn, that doesn't sound too crash hot. But something very interesting happens. If the brain is actually learning, if it's actually growing, if it's thriving, if it's getting a little bit better than it was the day before, then it actually gets to be happy. It's like a byproduct of learning and growing. And what excites me about this is what can happen in your relationship. You can grow. All right, okay. All right, let me take it back a little bit. I will talk about the brain chemicals because we like to think in terms of happy brain chemicals, but it's not that simple. It's not that easy. So we're talking about brain chemicals such as, let's say, serotonin. So what we do know, or at least the leading theory, is that if we put chemicals into a medication that will increase the amount of serotonin in your brain, then you will get this subjective feeling called happiness, or at least less anxiety, or at least being calm and confident and in control. And it's fair enough to say that increased levels of serotonin will give you this feeling of happiness. And serotonin levels change in our brain all the time. We can get it from sunshine, we can get it from doing something that's pleasurable, we can get it from a wonderful conversation, we can get it from being close to somebody that we like. The feeling of being calm and in control and at home raises serotonin levels, and that is part of the equation of happiness.
And where in the brain does that all happen?
Where did that happen? Okay, so serotonin is actually made in the brainstem in a place called the Ralph nucleus, okay? And it gets...
I'm testing you.
Yeah, I can see that. And it gets released in the limbic system. So okay. The limbic system of the brain is, for want of a better word, the feeling part of our brain, where emotions get generated. It's not quite that simple, but serotonin gets released in those areas to make us feel more calm and more at home in ourselves. The other chemical that I want to talk about is dopamine, because dopamine is, if you like, the pleasure and the motivation chemical. So anything that is pleasurable to us, be it food, music that we like, being with people, sexual satisfaction, again, being out in the sunshine, getting a a good hug, things like that, that will raise dopamine levels in our brain. But more than that, it's the motivation for wanting these things and driving us to actually get out there and do things that is motivated by dopamine as well. So getting a burst of dopamine, which is made in the hypothalamus, okay, so but again, it's experienced in the limbic system, gives us this feeling of happiness. The other things that contribute to happiness, brain chemically speaking, is oxytocin, which we have spoken a lot about.
Yes.
It's the brain chemical that mediates the feeling of love, trust, and attachment to another human being. And I suppose that's what's fundamental in a relationship, because that's what a relationship is. So in other words, just being in a relationship will actually increase happiness levels. Now, I know that's not always people's experience, so we've got to talk a bit about that. But fundamentally, we will be happier in relationship than without a relationship, because otherwise we're lonely and our oxytocin levels go down, our serotonin levels go down, and that's not very good for the human brain.
No.
Lastly, again, a relationship thing is the brain chemical beta endorphin. And this is a chemical that gets released when we're with other people and we just share. We share laughter. We share tears. We share a joke. We share conversation. We share music. We play together. We dance together. Anytime you have that feeling of, my gosh, I'm part of the human race. What a good idea. That raises beta endorphin levels, and that gives us a subjective feeling of well-being that contributes to this thing called happiness.
Great.
Before I leave biological happiness...
We keep going. Yes.
One more thing.
Yes.
So, late last century, there was some research that strongly suggested that we have a set point of happiness. So, in other words, if somebody is going through life and then they have an accident and become a paraplegic,
yes,
that will be a tragedy and that will be a hardship, but gradually, over time, they will reach their level of happiness again. On the other hand, somebody may have a windfall, like winning a lot of money at a lottery, and they will feel absolutely euphoric for a short time, but then they will gradually fall back down to their level of happiness.
Mm.
So, and it seems like there is a biological basis for thinking that we have set points in ourselves of what our level of happiness is going to be.
It's going to be interesting when you think about couples, whether they have a set point that they get to that is their together happiness.
Yes, and in a way that's negotiated.
Yeah.
There are some people who are naturally happy.
Mm.
They're just content with life.
Mm.
And there are some people who are the Eeyores of the world that sort of just have a bit more of a depressive outlook on life, Hippocrates would have called a melancholic character.
Mm.
So if there's a couple relationship like that, then they will find their point and negotiate that, and not that they're going to become the same, but they will tend towards each other, and they will have to negotiate that as part of their relationship dynamic. Because the thing about a relationship is it's a dance. It's not just a set point that this is what we're going to do. It's constant fluctuation, constant negotiation, but constant growth.
And I like that concept of a dance, because some of the couples that we interviewed actually in our 90 interviews that we did that are separate from the survey that we're going to talk about the results today,
yeah,
did actually say that when the other one's down, the other one lifts the other one up. So it's not actually a both going down together, but it's a lifting up to that place of happiness again.
Oh, what a beautiful metaphor. How nice.
Mm.
And I suppose that's part of the reason why, well, it's part of the reason that I like being in a relationship and why all of us do like being in a relationship, because whatever we go through, we don't go through alone.
Mm.
And there's something in that that leads to this elusive quality called happiness.
That's right, yeah.
We're only up to number one, four, okay?
Okay, so, all right.
Well, I'll go through the other ones pretty quickly.
Yeah, why don't you just go through them quickly, yeah.
Okay, so expectations has a lot to do with our happiness. So that gap between where we are and where we think we ought to be can lead to unhappiness.
Mm.
And if you think life is going the way that you want it to, then you're going to get closer to this idea called happiness. Now, that's particularly important to me as a psychiatrist because I see that we live in a world today where expectations are high and people's expectations, individual expectations of what life is supposed to achieve for them or grant them is very high, which means that we end up more of a gap. So if this expectation goes into our relationships as well, then we start to become unhappy with the relationship because we expect so much out of not just a relationship, but out of life. And that keeps us unhappy. So if we look at our expectations and examine them, and we actually are able to bring them down or be realistic in our expectations, we can actually increase our happiness levels.
Oh, good. But there's all sorts of things that couples are able to do that, you know, with that. But we'll talk about that a bit later. But there's...
Yeah, we will.
Yes, because when it comes to the couple, it changes a little bit.
I know. Yeah. And we'll get to the meat of this, which is what the couple's told us. And, we're still in the definitions, all right? So the third definition is the idea of meaning, that in life... If your brain is growing, if you as a person are growing, if your relationship is growing and developing, that's very satisfying. That is something that contributes to happiness. But the last element of happiness is in the moment pleasure. If it feels good, do it. And that's part of happiness. Because if we don't have that moment by moment pleasure, then we won't get this experience called happiness. However, what I want to suggest is that perhaps today's focus on feelings is probably just a little too much.
You mean the general focus in society?
Just the general focus
in go with your feelings.
Just go with your feelings, because we are under a hyper-individual zeitgeist, which says that if it feels good, do it. Go with your feelings, and that will make you happy. But if that were actually true, then people who were addicted to methamphetamine or cocaine would actually be getting more happiness than the rest of us. But the thing is that we know that that's not true, because these people end up with miserable lives and their satisfaction and their happiness then comes from getting beyond their addictions. It also means that people who have children would have a lot of unhappiness. But one of the secrets is that as much work as it takes to raise a child, to change nappies, to discipline somebody, to provide for them at school, even though that causes a lot of moment-by-moment unpleasure, let's put it that way, in the long term, it creates a lot of joy. So because of this, we've got a lot of pulling and pushing in opposite directions in happiness.
Yeah. So you not only the pulling and pushing, but also the idea, you've actually threaded the idea of learning all the way through those four.
I have.
So that it is, yes, high expectations, but if you learn and grow,
yes,
then and are willing to, you know, see that and take hold of that instead of, no, this is it, and if I don't get this, I'm out of here, you know, that sort of thing, you know. I think the idea of learning is so vital.
Yeah, it is. And look,
for happiness, as the science says.
For happiness, as the science says. And look, I don't want to sound as though I've got the answer to this, but as a psychiatrist, I have spoken to a lot of people about happiness levels, and a lot of my work is actually moving people away from this moment-to-moment idea of happiness and moving them towards growth and learning, as you said, that if they concentrate on the long term, their long-term contentment rather than their short-term pleasure, then as they grow as a person, as they learn as a person, and in their relationship, as they grow as a couple, that in the long term leads to this elusive thing that we're talking about today, happiness.
Happiness. Well, actually, the interesting thing is that's why we interviewed and surveyed long-term couples, because they had invested in that already in their relationship.
Wow, that's a wonderful word, invested.
Mm.
Because that says that you've got to have a little short-term pain. So in other words, you've got to give something up for something in the long term. And just like investing money means giving up a treat today so that you've got just a bit more in the bank account tomorrow, it shows what investment in a relationship actually is. It's giving up a little bit of pleasure for some long-term contentment.
And deep happiness, as some of the couples told us. Yeah.
Okay. So some of the couples told us.
Yes, they did. Okay. We're going to get into our findings
here. Yeah, I think we should.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
It's the couples that know. This is why we did our research on what couples tell us.
Yeah, okay, so I did want to clarify that these couples, these 1,112 coupled individuals, actually, were married 40-plus years.
Okay.
We didn't clarify that. So, again, the long-term marriage. We actually asked them, you know, are you happy? We said, you know, are you happy in your relationship? Where's your level of happiness? And it was 67% said high to very high.
High to very high.
Yeah, 67%.
Oh, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I like that.
About 29% said average.
Yeah.
But 67% high to very high is quite significant, I think.
So, so that leaves only a small percentage of people who said that they were unhappy.
That's right.
In their marriage.
Yeah. And some of the couples researched, does that say much, anything about levels of happiness in older marriages?
All right. Okay. So the research in long-term happiness is actually in a state of flux because the wisdom or the scientific literature 15 years ago would have said that relationships are happiest when they first start and then happiness will fall away over the years. And so that by the time you've been in a relationship for a long time, your happiness levels fall. But what we're finding now, and maybe this is because we're in a changing society, that the opposite is actually happening, that people who are in a relationship actually find that their relationships get better. Now, I'm not saying this for absolutely everybody, but the research is suggesting that people who have relationships that survive are actually thriving in their happiness levels.
Yes, and these couples were, they told us, you know, what contributed to their happiness and their unhappiness. So I think that we might just start sharing the top six of what contributed to their happiness.
Top six.
Okay, for these couples. Number one was respect.
Respect.
Yes. Number one that contributed to their happiness as a couple was respect.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Yeah, okay. It is.
Yeah. So you'll notice Caroline has these findings and they didn't end up in our book. So she's sharing all of these at the moment.
Yes, for the first time.
It's a surprise for me. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. We're sharing it for the first time.
Because I've got all the data I've been holding it back from Christian. No, it's not quite true. No, we just obviously had to pick and choose what we put in our book, which we actually didn't talk about, which is called Resilient Relationships.
Yes, that's right.
And so all of our study is in that book, except some of these facts that we're going to be sharing today. So respect. So in addition to sharing the actual results from the survey, we're going to talk about some of the couple's responses to each of these aspects of the ones that we interviewed. So on top of the survey, we interviewed the 90 couples.
Yeah.
So for when they talked about respect, the couples talked about respecting each other's values. These were the two areas.
Yes.
Respecting each other's values and respecting each other's separate time and interests.
Okay.
That's what was they talked about respecting a lot of things about each other, but particularly those two.
Yeah.
So, for example, Ergun and Anne from France and Turkey, a cross-cultural marriage there. Anne said, I really respect Ergun's values of truth and honesty. That is the most important thing for me in respect.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, everyone has different values and everything, but for her, that was very important. And that was also their shared values, truth and honesty.
Okay, could I just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah.
Because it's very interesting because respect, in a way, is what Cahil Gibran would say is leaving some space between your individuality, just letting the other person be the other person. And one thing that I know that I do a lot is emphasize togetherness because we live in a society that there isn't much togetherness. But this is wisdom that comes from people who've been together for 40 years and they have their togetherness. And in their togetherness, respect, I believe, means that they're allowing their separate selves as well, time apart, but also values, which means that there's a respect for where they differ in values and where they differ in what they want to do with their time.
Absolutely. So, you know, we had one couple that one just loved adventuring and loved going off on big hikes, and he dragged his spouse along for a lot of them, and then she got fed up at one point and said, look, this is not me, okay? And so they worked out a compromise, and he would do things that she enjoyed doing, and then she would do things that, but they worked, they came somewhere, they met in the middle with that one.
Did they? Okay.
But the important thing was actually respecting the other's enjoyment of mountaineering or whatever it happened to be.
Okay. You know? Does this mean that I'm going skiing alone from now on?
Yep. I don't like skiing.
Oh, you don't like the cold, do you?
I don't like the cold, no. Okay, all right, so that was number one.
Number one
was for what contributed to these couples' happiness was respect. Number two was shared values.
Shared values, okay.
Yeah, so in a past episode, we've talked about the glue.
Yes.
That's our main finding of,
yes,
of what keeps couples together. And number two, finding... Number three was actually shared values.
Yeah.
So this is no surprise.
So let's just do a little recap on those glue secrets. Number one is commitment.
Mm.
Number two is altruism. And number three is shared values.
Yes.
And so it's very interesting because this, in a sense, is the opposite of respect. Okay, so even though I respect your values where you're different to me, what I really like is that we share so many values. And so this has contributed to happiness. So it's a balance rather than one or the other. And the balance here is sharing values, but also respecting where you're different in values. Is that kind of... how you read the information?
Yes, most definitely. And even like with separate time and interests, there are plenty of couples that said that they did everything together.
Okay.
So there were some people that was a really strong value. We're talking about values.
Yep.
And others, no, it was really important to do everything together.
Yeah. So one of those messages is different couples do things differently.
That's right.
And so a couple need to find out where they are on this, and that the ideas that we're bringing here, although they're based on over 1,000 people, they're general pointers that may or may not help your relationship at the moment.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, great. So number one was respect. Number two was shared values. Number three for what contributed to these couples' happiness was friendship.
Friendship.
Very, very important. So much so that it was actually 46% of the couples said that they were best friends.
Oh, that's lovely.
And this is the ones that we interviewed, said they were best friends.
Okay. I just wanted to say that that's actually consistent with the research in studies that show that people would stay together and would be satisfied with their relationship if they were able to say to each other that they were best friends as well.
Oh, right.
That was a big contributor.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're in line with all the other studies there.
Great. So Marge and Ted have been married for 56 years, and Marge said, "He's my closest and best friend and the only person who understands me and still loves me as I am."
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, so as I am.
Yes.
Yeah. And knows all those faults, knows all of those things.
Yeah.
And best friend through that, you know? Very, very important.
Yeah.
And then we've got Chuck and Stephen, who have been together for 30 years, Chuck said, "I classify him as my best friend. Not necessarily my most exciting friend or my most compatible friend." So I thought that was really quite interesting. So, yeah, you know, they're besties, but they're not necessarily, that compatible all the time. So,
I may just add something there because that actually shows how Chuck is monitoring his expectations. Okay, so even though Steve is his best friend, he sort of says, well, look, I'm not idealizing that. I don't expect Steve to be my most compatible friend or my most exciting friend, but he's my best friend. And there's something in that where Chuck sort of goes, look, I can't expect everything of the one person. And by mediating his expectations, it adds to the happiness within the couples.
Yeah, that ties in beautifully with the expectations.
I think it does.
Yeah, no, it really
does.
Yeah, so, and also the honesty and saying, look, yeah, I'm in, and not saying, oh, yeah, everything, he's everything or whatever, but just saying, no, you know, there are problems here. There are really problems here, but we're still best friends. We always still, you know, have that.
And that's something that Anna valued in her cross-cultural relationship, the honesty and the truth that came from her partner.
True.
So there's something about reaching that space of honesty and realness that I believe touches an authenticity in each of us, that yearning that we all have to be known and to be known to the person who's closest to you. And perhaps that's another ingredient that leads to happiness within a couple relationship.
Being known.
Being known.
Yeah, being known.
But being honest about that.
Yes, and just saying, yeah, I'm actually known by you.
Yeah, because if you can't be honest about who you are, that means you're holding something back about yourself for fear of rejection. We understand that. But it means that you're not being known. Okay, so it's when you're able to take the risk of being honest and being known and risking that rejection, and somebody goes, no, well, I kind of know that about you. That maybe that's one of the things that feels very good and leads to happiness. I don't know.
It does. But again, I think that's a long term aspiration for couples that are just starting out. They're not going to do the big reveal straight away. And I've got this, and I've got this, and I've, you know, and it's also the trust that has to build, and a little bit of respect in that too.
Yeah.
So to say, okay, now I'm going to show that part of myself to you.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to reveal this part of myself, and I am confident now because I've got the security in our relationship that you're not going to reject me for it.
Okay, so you're building a case for long-term being part of happiness because you're building ideas like trust and respect and taking time and building security. And that becomes a base on which you can start to be honest. And that then, in my mind, leads to this thing called happiness because it's taken some time and we've grown as a couple. That seems to be part of what the couples here are saying through their aspects contributing to their happiness. That's just the way I read it anyway.
No, definitely. Okay, so the next contributor to happiness from our couples we're up to number four. Number four is laughing and having fun together. So laughter and having fun together was number four.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And I suppose that speaks of the importance of that present moment pleasure because laughter, it releases beta endorphins, but if you can do that with somebody that you love, that means it's releasing oxytocin as well as serotonin and dopamine. And doing that together with somebody that you love brings you that moment-to-moment pleasure that you then hold in your memory to sort of say, you know what, we've shared a lot of good times too.
Absolutely. And again, these are the long-term couples that we interviewed said that they laughed together more over time.
Oh,
isn't that
that's
great?
Lovely.
Yeah. So they're more comfortable with each other, and they're, and maybe they find their own. And a lot of the couples did say, you know, oh, we've got this kind of humor, or she's got that humor, but I've got this kind of humor. But we've worked out a place where we really enjoy humor together, and that's what we do. We watch these kind of movies, or we, you know, make these kind of jokes, or
yeah. So. This to me is really interesting because, again, I'm picking up on you're embedding this idea of time. Even though we're talking about laughter, which is a moment-to-moment pleasure thing, it's over time you find your area of laughter, you find where you're compatible in laughter, and you find your place of honesty to let that mask down where you can be reveal more of yourself and laugh more at yourself and the other person, perhaps.
That's true. And it's always those moments in early relationships, isn't it, where your partner is laughing hilariously at something and you're just sitting there and not finding it funny at all. So that's different styles of humour that you bring relationships. But again, over time, that sort of gets understood.
Yeah.
But interestingly, the couples that we interviewed use laughter in different ways.
Yep.
So, for example, Joe and Rob. So Joe was Australian and Rob was from Scotland. They've been married 47 years. It was actually Rob's Scottish humour that helped ease the pressure of raising a severely intellectually disabled child who had up to 1,800 seizures a day.
What? 1,000 seizures a day?
1,800 seizures a day,
wow.
Okay?
That's severe.
So Joe said, if I get cranky and get in a really cranky mood, which I did often, you know, taking care of this young boy, Rob always makes me laugh. So it was actually the laughter that alleviated the pressure, so much pressure in that relationship.
Yeah, yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Okay, because that underscores something else, because they were in it for the long haul, but they needed some moment-to-moment happiness through laughter that would see them through. Difficult times,
And other couples use laughter to alleviate conflict situations too. And we talked a little bit about this in our last episode when we talked about the importance of heart and humour when you're in arguments. So this is Graham and Angelica, married 46 years. That's a cross-cultural marriage too. Angelica is from Germany and Graham's Australian. And they said laughter is just a great way of overcoming. If you're laughing 95% of the time and you have 5% of an argument, then the reality is it's not going to be a big problem.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So just using humour in a hot argument situation is probably a good idea. Things like, is this going to be a long or a short argument? Should we go straight up to making up, or do you want to see this all through? Or, I've never noticed that pimple on the edge of your nose, right, in the middle of an argument.
Oh, that could cause more of an argument, you know.
I suppose it could, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, true. That's really good. And one of the couples actually gave us a tip, too. This is Russell and Laura. They're academics from New Jersey, married 50 years. And Russell said, I try to get her to laugh as many times a day as I can. And they told me that they were up to 15 times the day of the interview.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's a really high bar, though. I mean, even once would be good. Once a day.
For some people.
For some people, I know.
But yeah. I suppose, again, it's in the long term that laughter becomes not just a moment-by-moment thing, but if I can get my partner to laugh just a bit more every day, it's a work in progress as well as being a present moment feeling pleasure.
That's right. And I do have to point out that some couples said that they didn't laugh at all. That wasn't part of their relationship.
Well, okay.
It's just the way it goes.
I remember that.
Okay, all right. So number five in what contributed to couple happiness was fidelity.
Fidelity.
Yeah. So just, yeah, fidelity. So we know that is.
Oh, we know what it is. It means that if I'm faithful to you today, you'll be happy. Is that right?
That's right. Oh, no. Don't do that.
No.
No,
I was just joking, right. But, okay, but fidelity, again, is a long-term thing.
Yes.
And that long-term security produces some of this elusive thing that we call happiness.
Yes, and loyalty comes into that.
Loyalty comes into that.
Each other and just knowing that security.
And I suppose what's interesting for me as a psychiatrist, it means that something that is actually a long-term issue gets translated into a day-to-day feeling.
Yes.
That feeling of loyalty and trust in your partner becomes a day-to-day thing that you can draw upon. And all of that is based on a long-term attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, and number six that contributed to couple happiness was a decision for commitment.
Okay.
So, I mean, harks back to our research on what is the glue that keeps relationships together, but a decision for commitment.
In other words, having that glue underlie the relationship, people saw as a contributor directly to happiness.
That's right. And what I find really interesting with these top six results, which I'll read out again, number one, this is what contributed to happiness. Number one, respect.
Yeah.
Number two, shared values. Number three, friendship. Number four, laughing and having fun together. Number five, fidelity. And number six, a decision for commitment. Is that when you look at our actual reasons for marital longevity, so the secret of staying together.
Yes.
Two of them are in there.
Yes.
And that's wonderful. But there's some differences there.
When you say two of them are in there, I believe that you're saying two of them are right near the top, because almost all of them are in there. Okay, like humour was in there.
Well, that's true.
Friendship was actually in there.
Of the top three. Of the top three.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if we go to the top 17, which is what we looked at in our study.
Yes.
they're almost all
oh,
in
they're
there.
All in there. Respect was in there, fidelity, absolutely. Friendship was in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Humour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And just from a scientific, just putting a scientific cap on at the moment, that actually confirms the science that basically says that relationship satisfaction, or what we're calling happiness here on a day-to-day basis, leads to long-term relationship longevity. So, okay. So in other words, and I suppose it makes sense. If you're happy in your relationship will last longer.
Yeah.
So I suppose the message there is, yeah, it's worth working on the happiness of your relationship.
It is, that's right.
Yeah, it is.
That's
it's
all
worth
right.
it. Yeah.
Good, yeah. All right, so we don't run out of time. I think we should move on to unhappiness. What causes unhappiness?
Okay, before we do that, I just want to tie those six things up because... I started off with definitions that were based on happiness, biology, expectations, meaning, and moment-to-moment pleasure. And I suppose what we did was tie all of those together because happiness is not something that we look at from four different aspects, but because happiness is so complex, we just move into happiness through these four areas, biology, expectations, meaning, and moment-to-moment pleasure. And I suppose as we were discussing, it struck me that those six things kind of embody all four of those together.
They do.
Yeah, they kind of do.
Yeah, and you tied it in, and there's some examples there too.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing for me is the idea of growth.
Yeah.
Because over time, the moment-to-moment pleasure changes. The leaning on commitment and fidelity, that becomes a growth thing, and this idea of growth. So maybe that neuroscientist was right in 2007 when he said the brain is wired to learn and grow.
And for me, it's actually expectations, too, is tied in there, too.
I expected you to say that, yeah.
because that you know, if you're actually... Respect comes into expectations.
Yes.
Friendship comes into expectations. Fidelity, most definitely, into expectations. And decision for commitment. It's all tied into, okay, monitoring expectations, not coming in as an individual, I want to get this and that's going to make me happy instead of what will make we happy.
Yes. I do want to turn that a bit on its head because there's this idea that we're asking too much of our relationships. But what we're actually finding through couples that have been together more than 40 years is relationships actually give so much. And I just want to put forward the idea that perhaps we're not expecting enough of our relationships.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
Okay. But as individuals, we all have such high expectations of what life can offer us that we're looking for fulfillment of our expectations elsewhere, in our career, in other people, in travel, and all the possibilities that the internet and social media can afford us, that perhaps we're overlooking the goal that we have right in front of us.
So true.
Our long-term relationships.
That's right, because all of the energy goes into all of fulfilling our happiness needs in all of these other areas instead of, yes, focusing on what's right in front of us and doesn't cost a thing.
It doesn't. Well, it costs a bit of effort.
Oh, well, it costs,
Yeah, but it's worth it. And this harks back to what you said about investment, that people who invest in their relationship end up being happy. So, in other words, it's going to take a bit of work.
That's right.
But it's worth it.
Yes. Okay. So let's have a look at some of those blocks to happiness in the relationship. So the top six aspects that contributed to the couple's unhappiness. So number one was work pressures.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because, okay, so I'm reacting because that harks straight back to what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
The idea that it's things elsewhere in our society that's taking away from our relationships. And I suppose work pressure becomes the number one thing because we spend so much time at it and we have such high expectations of what we can achieve in our careers and jobs.
Most definitely. And I want to bring number two in quickly here because it's tied in a way.
Yeah.
And that is financial stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So work pressures and financial stress.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting is these are couples that have been married 40 plus years.
Yeah.
But we, as part of our research, we did interview 290 couples that had been only married for a few years. So younger couples.
Yeah.
And these were big aspects for them, work pressures and financial stress.
Yeah.
These were issues for them. So the issues that were bringing unhappiness, I guess, in reflection too, for the older couples looking back on their lives, what brought unhappiness, they'll be looking back at those times where they went, there was a lot of work pressures and there was a lot of financial stress, and they're the times that we were unhappy.
Yeah, and this is something that amazes me. And I suppose as a psychiatrist, I often have in mind what human nature actually is, because over the last 40 years, the amount of people in this world that are in abject poverty has actually halved. So in other words, throughout all of human history, we haven't been doing as well as we have now. However, as far as our happiness is concerned, we have so many expectations of how we're going to do financially and materially, that it's the expectations that is keeping us perhaps unhappy in this area.
So true.
Whereas the reality is we're all doing really well.
That's right. Exactly. So I just want to share something from a couple of those younger couples that were both full-time registered nurses and that were working very, very hard. And they said, as two registered nurses, the stress and anxiety we both feel can easily wear away at our new marriage.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But they have learned that the foundation of their relationship is actually quite strong. By prioritizing their marriage and sitting down and talking through their feelings before and after work. So it's a great tip, actually.
That is.
They make sure that they don't project their own stress, anxiety, and frustration onto their partner, but they acknowledge each other's feelings. So it allows them to be understanding of each other when one of them might be short-worded or moody. So, yeah, they had not been married for very long at all. I think it was 3 to 6 years.
3 to 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about their comment to me is that they didn't say we should be working less.
That's true.
They actually said, no, this is what we do. But if we just share our feelings, if we just share how the day went, if we just check in on each other, then we will feel together and be able to basically share the load.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a great tip.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah.
Okay, so what contributes to unhappiness in couples? Number one was work pressures. Number two, financial stress. Number three was poor communication.
Poor communication?
Yeah, so
Not
communicating very well.
Yeah.
That's part of the literature too, isn't it, that's saying communication.
Okay, so the literature is changing on this as well. At the end of last century, we would definitely have said poor communication contributes to relationship breakdown. It just makes obvious sense that the better you communicate, the better you're going to get ideas across. However, what we found is that even if people improved in their conversation and communication, it didn't save the relationship, and that people who have poor communication and they still have poor communication, they can deal with it. The relationship can still continue. So I suppose the emphasis has gone away from this idea that you have to be able to communicate well, because let's face it, some of us just don't. Some people just don't communicate well, but they're still capable of love. They're still capable of support. They're still capable of being there when somebody else needs it. And that to me is a good indication of how the literature changes and shows what is going on that's deeper rather than just on the surface.
It's really interesting because one of the couples that I interviewed, one was from China and the other one was from Canada, and they did have a disagreement in front of me during the interview, and it was interestingly over financial issues.
Right.
Yes. But they got through it. And quite respectfully.
Yep.
So they were obviously using a lot of their happiness skills, yes, to get through it. I just saw a great example of really, really poor communication right in front of me, even though they had been married for over 40 years.
Yep.
But still, they got through it, and you could just see them, just this angst, you know, we still can't communicate well enough. I mean, it was a cross-cultural relationship, but
yes,
it was more than that. They they were, you could see they were pulling skills that they've used and they've tried over time to try and negotiate right in front of me this issue that came up over financial issues, which they really disagreed on, to try and pull their relationship and get it back on track. And then it was a lovely moment. They just, there was just a pause and they looked at each other, they had eye contact, and then they went on. And it was just like, we know each other. We've been here before. Oh, and now we're going to move on.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Because you took us into that interview and you actually said this was an example of poor communication.
Yes.
So couple therapists like myself would try to work on that. But what you're actually saying is that the way I hear it is that didn't matter. It was something deeper that was in their relationship. That's what mattered. That's what kept them together. And they were able to move forward.
That's right. It was a lovely moment. Okay, so that was number three in what contributed to couple unhappiness. Number four is high expectations.
Okay.
So okay. That's that thread again.
Yep.
Yeah, so high expectations, yeah, is obviously something. And number five in things that contributed to unhappiness was arguing or not talking. So, conflict.
Which one? Okay, well, so one of the things that we do like to get across is if you're a couple that don't argue and you give each other the silent treatment, is that silent treatment is really just arguing without words.
Yes.
Because you're out of harmony, you're in some sort of a conflict, and the feelings underneath are the same. And quite frankly, conflict is distressing for all of us.
Yes.
Right? From couple relationships to global conflicts, we humans, sorry to say, but we don't do it terribly well.
Yeah.
But if we can do what we can to resolve conflicts, and we've spoken that in another episode, and I'm sure that we'll come back to it again, big topic in itself. But yeah, you can see how that distress will cause unhappiness.
That's right. So that's interesting too, because of you talked about the silent treatment and the cold shoulder.
Yes.
And everyone thinks, oh, we don't argue, but then there's those moments of silent treatment, and that's why couples in this study were very specific in saying arguing or not talking.
Or not talking.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. And interesting, because the emerging research in this area is showing that arguing couples do better.
Yes.
Not because it feels good to argue, not because of that, but because they're being honest with each other, and because they're revealing what they're actually passionate about, even at the cost of being out of harmony. And I suppose the tip there is whatever the conflict was, to revisit it an hour later or even a few days later to say, I didn't like the conflict, but this is what I meant.
Yes.
And I hear this is what you were trying to say to me.
That's
something
right.
like that, to come back into relationship.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so number six is control issues.
Control issues.
Yes. So one, well, it could be one, each of them can trying to control each other, or it could be one person being more controlling and dominating.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that can get into some very difficult areas, but there's just the normal sort of control dynamic too in relationships that can contribute to unhappiness.
Yeah. Okay, so we could actually do an episode on control issues, because they're actually very important in a relationship, because they get quite complex. Because the setup of a relationship is that you've got two people, each with their own independent wills, that want to do what they want to do, but they want to be together at the same time. So there's conflict inherent in that. And I hate to say it, but we all have techniques to try to get our way across and control the other person. And some of those can be undermining, some of those can be secretive, some of those can be upfront. But we all have this need to be ourselves while being in relationship with another person.
Well, that's a kind way of saying it. Techniques. I'd call it out-and-out manipulation, you know? Most definitely. I know when I'm manipulating you. I'm very cognizant of that, you know? So, yeah. And it's good to verbalize that.
Well, no, it is actually. It is actually, because it's part of you being known.
Yes.
And me accepting you,
yes.
And also you know how I try to control you.
Absolutely.
And I may use different tactics, let's call them, rather than techniques, but it's the same dynamic. You know, I want to be me.
Yes.
But the thing about a relationship is perhaps we can't really be happy unless we also allow the other person to be themselves.
That's right.
Because if we're keeping somebody as a servant or a slave, then we don't actually have a free agent with us that is free willingly choosing to be together with us and to love us.
That's right. And it's not really happiness, is it? It's
no,
getting your
right.
own way all the time, as is it Corrie ten Boom said, is not happiness.
No, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so just to summarize, well, I'll just speak those six through again. The attributes that contribute to couple unhappiness from our couples. Number one, work pressures. Number two, financial stress. Number three, poor communication. Number four, high expectations. Number five, arguing or not talking. And number six, control issues.
Yeah, okay. And just so that we can end up on a bit of a high, could you just go through these six issues that actually lead to happiness? Because that's what we want to take away.
Number one is respect. Number two is shared values.
Shared values.
Number three is friendship.
Friendship.
Number four is laughing or having fun together.
Laughing.
Number five is fidelity.
Fidelity.
And number six is a decision for commitment.
A decision for commitment.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that, Caroline. I'm just going to tie a few things in there because we've had a really interesting discussion about this idea of happiness and we've covered a lot of ground. In fact, I've got to say, I've learnt a lot.
Well, you didn't know those results.
No, I didn't know the results.
Yeah,
I didn't know the results. But also, happiness is elusive. It's even elusive to define. So
yes.
We started off by talking about the biology of happiness. We talked about expectations. We talked about long-term meaning. And we also talked about short-term pleasure. And happiness, as we found out, can actually encompass all of that. And a long-term relationship can encompass all of that. And so bringing all that together shows that, yeah, your relationship can be your greatest asset because it is the contributor to happiness if you take care of it well.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's come up with a few techniques that people can take away and add to the happiness of their relationship. And I suppose the first thing that I want to say, and the science is unequivocal in this, just being in a relationship, just having a long-term relationship contributes to your happiness. So it contributes to your physical health, your mental health, your emotional well-being. It protects you against loneliness, protects you against addictions. It protects you against existential crises. You actually get to know more of who you are when you're in relationship with somebody else. Now, the thing is that all gets taken for granted. Because when you're in a relationship for a long time, I'm sorry, but things are going to go wrong. And so we have this tendency to look at what goes wrong because we have an expectation that things will go right. So the first thing that I would say for absolutely everybody is just to monitor your expectations.
That's right.
And if we can monitor our expectations, then we already take pressure off the relationship and pressure off ourselves.
And also, I would add, if you're talking about expectations, I would add learning and growing together, not seeking happiness, not looking for happiness in the wrong places, but and saying my individual happiness, but your together happiness. What does your together as a couple happiness look like?
Yeah.
Learning and growing together is part of that happiness. And that is such a joy.
Yeah. In fact, that learning and growing, as you just articulated then, is perhaps the core of the happiness. So I'll often say to young people, you can have your day-to-day pleasures as long as they don't get in the way of your long-term contentment. So if you're failing exams because you're taking too many drugs, or if you're losing your relationship because you're going for pleasures elsewhere, then you're letting short-term pleasures getting in the way of your long-term contentment. So take care of your long-term contentment, but still have your short-term pleasures and enjoy the short-term pleasures with the person that you're with.
With the person that you're with. With the person that you love.
With the person that you love. With your long-term partner.
That's right.
All right. Okay, so just to put it into a tip, all relationships work differently. So I'm just thinking about a story that you talked about in a cross-cultural relationships, the people who had an argument in front of you and had poor communication skills. But what they did was they saw a strength that they have elsewhere in the relationship, and they recruited that strength to see them through that conflict, and that strength contributed to their relationship. So the take-home tips are... Sure, manage your expectations, but also see what the strengths of your relationship actually is and see if you can recruit that to bear down onto the happiness of your relationship and not take for granted the goal that you have right in front of you.
That's a lovely place to end. Okay, so we've really enjoyed your company here. We'll be back in another month for another topic on resilient relationships with science-based evidence, of course, from both of us. And we hope you will join us then. Bye for now.
Bye for now.